He is one of America's prominent sports commentators and columnists,
known for his fearless opinions and passionate dialogue.
I know it's sad, but the best sports conversation has absolutely nothing to do with sports.
He has perfected the Daily Sports Podcast, having produced hundreds of topical, credible shows without even a hint of fake news.
No filters, no mute buttons, no BS, just me and whatever the hell I feel like talking about.
He has done 1,700 TV shows, written 8,000 columns, broadcast hundreds of talk shows, published a book.
He has covered every major sports event nationally and worldwide.
And yet, we still can't shut him up.
The ceiling is the roof.
And now from Los Angeles, inside his studio by the Pacific Ocean,
where he plans on hanging out with a beer immediately after this podcast is recorded.
Oh, man.
Here he is, Jay Mariotti.
The show is unmuted. I'm Jay in Los Angeles, and the soiled and scandalized sport of college basketball needed this so desperately. A national championship from a team that persevered after the most excruciating of defeats to claim the most redemptive, rewarding title in recent sports history. That is not overstating matters here. Virginia and its humble, God-fearing coach Tony Bennett showed all those cheaters out there, all the wrongdoers, that there is a right way to win, that you don't have to cut sleazy deals with shoe companies and agents to buy one-and-done mercenaries who show up for a few classes on campus and then head to the NBA. No, this team won with players making the most of their abilities. The chill of Kyle Guy, the skill of DeAndre Hunter, the heart of Ty Jerome, all thanks to the guidance of their embattled coach. Bennett called it a painful gift, the crushing loss to Baltimore, Maryland County, that stigmatized the Wahoos as the first number one seed ever to lose to a number 16 seed. But that humiliation is vanquished now, as Virginia has taught America a resounding lesson in how to reverse a narrative. It's also taught America a lesson about humanity and goodness in a time of so much wretched behavior in our country.
All you need to know about sports today in 15 minutes, or maybe 18, you know, depending on the Warriors, the Steelers, Trump, and the LeBron James Media Network.
So, Zion who? This NCAA tournament showed us, amid the FBI wiretaps and the impending finality of the one-and-done era, that the sport of basketball still can thrive as great theater. Rather than a Zion Williamson takeover, the tournament gave us a relentless barrage of close, memorable games, none better than Virginia beating Texas Tech in its everyman coach Chris Beard in an overtime thriller. We need to feel good about sports with every day bringing a new downer. You hear me on this podcast. And everything about Virginia's story makes us feel very good. Bennett's coaching father, Dick, was so distraught after that first round loss last year that he couldn't bear to show up for the first two rounds in person this year. But he started to believe, like a lot of us did, when Virginia's run began to feel like destiny. That 60-foot pass and buzzer beater to force overtime in the eventual victory over Purdue, then those three free throws on Saturday by Kyle Guy to turn defeat into victory against Auburn. These were blessings, if not miracles, and Bennett did not shy away from wondering if the heavens have been testing this team before coming through with the ultimate reward.
It felt like there was something else going on, and I was part of a story that was something bigger than myself. That's my opinion on it, and I felt that, and I believe that, but I'm so thankful that these guys got to experience. And I told them after the game, I made them look at each other in the eye, and we just said, just stay humble and stay thankful through this all. It doesn't have to change you. You can enjoy it, but remain that way.
The Virginia story is grounded in spirituality. Guy suffered from depression last year. He has been open with his feelings after that loss, which is why it was so wonderful to see him overcome his darkness and excel in this Final Four, hitting those free throws, that huge three before those free throws, and then big shots, especially in the first half on Monday night. You could almost hear Kyle release the pain as he spoke afterward with a net hanging around his neck.
Just to know that even though, you know, you're at the bottom, there's still, you know, a lot of ground you can make up going forward. So I was in a dark place a year ago, and I'm in a very light place right now, obviously, and sometimes it takes longer for people to get to their happy place. But, you know, I'm very happy and excited to kind of be a beacon of hope and try to help people because it's not easy and a lot of people don't want to reach out. But I pray and hope that they do, because that's the best thing I ever did, was try to talk about it and hit it head on. And, you know, I definitely tackled the demon tonight.
Now, you won't see many players from the title game in the NBA, but that was the beauty of it. Kids knowing this was their one moment to shine, and both teams did just that. With the best player on the floor, presumptive NBA lottery pick Hunter, hitting the game's two biggest shots, a three to send the game into overtime, and then that killer three in the extra period. Who didn't feel for Beard, who crashed the party finally after years as a coaching vagabond, who had 12, count them, 12 jobs before Texas Tech, and he was at Division II Angelo State, wherever the hell that is, only 4 years ago. Beard joked about attending numerous Final Fours as the guy downing draft beers in the lobby, just thrilled to be there. I think I have seen Chris Beard at Final Fours in the lobby downing beers. He was that guy. But he was trying to meet people and network. And finally, he proved that this man can coach. He is the hottest coach in the college profession, and he's staying right there in Lubbock with a fat raise and a newfound respect in the sport. His team could have just folded up on Monday night. Nope. Sent it to overtime. And there's one player in that team who will play pro ball in the NBA. It's Culver. And he was up and he was down in the Final Four. Otherwise, this was a miracle in its own right, fueled by Chris Beard.
It's tough. You know, I just kind of wanted to, like, look around and obviously you see Virginia celebrate, and then you kind of look back and our guys are just in pain. But that was tough as a coach. You know, I love these guys, and I hate that they're feeling this, but what a season. I mean, come on, man. Final Four, national championship game, Big 12 champs, a lot to be proud of. Doesn't make it any easier right now, but we're just getting started. You know, these guys that were our seniors will go on to be great pros, great fathers, great husbands, great people. They're all graduating here in a couple months, so that'll be a great day of graduation. But and then our program will be back. We're not going anywhere. We're gonna stay relative in college basketball.
And it wouldn't be a major sporting event if not for an officiating controversy and the resulting outcry. Now, just to get this straight, James Breeding, a Louisville insurance agent in his day job, did make the absolute correct call in whistling Auburn's Samir Dowdy for a foul on Kyle Guy with 0.6 seconds left, the very whistle that reversed history in what will be a memorable sequence in Final Four lore. But the Auburn folks, who already have begun celebrating in Minneapolis and back at Toomer's Corner on campus, do have a legitimate beef about Ty Jerome's double dribble that was not called seconds earlier. Clearly, as we've all seen by now, Jerome bounced the ball off his foot and then restarted his dribble, and it should have been Auburn ball and most likely Auburn victory. And like we saw in the NFC title game, replay should have been used in that situation to correct the call. So just as the NFL finally will be using replay on pass interference plays, such as the hideous non-call that sent the Rams to the Super Bowl and the Saints home for the offseason, the NCAA should be allowing replay in that situation, duh. What is the point of staging billion-dollar sports events if you can't get the deciding plays right? But I do want to commend Auburn coach Bruce Pearl, the embattled Bruce Pearl. I was trashing him the other day on this podcast, the infamous sideline loon, the cheater for life, for keeping his composure and responding with class afterward. As soon as I saw that non-call and then saw the foul call in the corner, I immediately started to wonder how Pearl would handle it and how a post-game blow-up only would add to his tainted reputation in college basketball. He easily could have said the NCAA was out to get him and that college basketball did not want Pearl coaching in the title game. Hell, I certainly didn't want Pearl coaching in the title game. I said that on the last podcast. Instead, give Bruce this. He gained some points with his dignity.
I asked him, you know, would we have trusted God any more in victory than we would trust him in defeat? In the sense that he carried us all the way here, all season long, and put so much blessing upon us. And so this is what the plan was. And let's handle the defeat like with dignity and with class. Let's give the opponent credit. Virginia shot 56-57% the second half. Offensively, they played really well and scored and knocked down shots. And as a result, they're still playing.
On the right side, toward the front, Nicole.
Nicole Auerbach of The Athletic. Bruce, did you see Ty Jerome and the double dribble? Did you think in that moment that it was a missed call?
We were in a situation late where we had some fouls to give, and I knew there was a disruption there. And you just got to get on to the next play.
Joe Giuliano, Philadelphia Inquirer. Bruce, despite what you said, I have to ask you, what was your view of the last call, and what did you tell Samir in the locker room afterward?
We didn't focus on that. We focused on how we're going to handle the defeat at Auburn with class and dignity. There are lots of calls during a game, and you're going to get some you're not, and some you're not going to get. My advice as an administrator of the game is, if that's a foul, call it. Call it at the beginning of the game, call it in the middle of the game, call it at the end of the game. Don't call it any more or less at any other time during a game. That was the call. But it can't define, don't let it define the game, because then you're taking away from Ty Jerome. Or you're taking away from Anthony McLemore with 12 rebounds. Or, you know, Bryce Brown almost leading Auburn back to an incredible come-from-behind victory. I'd love that to be the story.
One of his players, Bryce Brown, wasn't quite as restrained, although this was immediately after the game in the tunnel.
New reps. Yes, Andy, get some new reps. Yes, Andy, get some new reps.
Come on, bro. And keep this in mind before focusing entirely on an Auburn screw job. Kyle Guy still had to make those three free throws, which followed, and this was forgotten, Guy's acrobatic three-pointer he made from the right corner moments earlier. I'm just flabbergasted at the cool of that kid. Guy is an erratic shooter. He might not make the NBA because of that streakiness, but NBA teams had to notice his unflappable composure in hitting those three free throws. Bang, 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 as tens of millions watched. Here was Guy, what a guy, explaining a moment we won't forget anytime soon.
Yeah, these are moments that, you know, every basketball player has dreamed of, you know, hitting a game-winning shot or free throws or whatever. You know, I kind of had that feeling in your stomach, like a good nervousness, like, all right, this is my chance. And, you know, to be able to go to the national championship off of that for these guys and Coach Bennett, I mean, I really don't have the words.
And following that brief pause for a compelling Final Four, which reminded us of how much fun the sport can be, college basketball returns to its FBI dirtball watch. And it should come as no surprise that Zion Williamson, the most dominant college player in years, is under scrutiny amid allegations that are creeping very, very close to the sacred regime of Mike Krzyzewski at Duke. Attorney Michael Avenatti might be covered in sleaze as the attorney for Stormy Daniels, but while he has been charged with attempting to extort more than $20 million in payments from Nike, I would like to know the information that Avenatti has. And Avenatti appears to have documents that might support his claim that Nike paid Williamson's mother for consulting services while her son was a top prep recruit. You do remember how Zion initially appeared headed for Kansas, which, by the way, is among the many programs being probed for illicit payoffs, before suddenly flipping to Duke. Oh, really? He just liked the campus? Oh, yeah. Avenatti says it's no coincidence, and I'm not naive, and Duke Athletic Director Kevin White says the school is investigating. Coach K says there's nothing to Avenatti's claims, but let's see. That's what Rick Pitino said at Louisville. That's what Bill Self said at Kansas. That's what Sean Miller said at Arizona. That's what Will Wade said at LSU. On and on and on and on and on. Let's just go straight to the wiretap to see the lie detector alarm go off in those cases. Look, you don't have to be a sleuth to see how this works. The assistant coaches are involved in the bribery with the shoe company reps and the player agents, and the head coach conveniently keeps his distance. But if you think the head coaches are unaware and oblivious to what's going on here, you are a naive numbnut. Yes, naive numbnut. I'm not ready to say Duke cheated to get Zion, but I'm not going to dismiss that possibility either. What did Krzyzewski know? And if this case does implicate him, it will stain his legacy considerably. Not that John Wooden didn't have his bag men back in the day during the UCLA dynasty, but we've always thought of Duke as high and mighty and pristine, never sinking low into the gutter, even when the prize is as monstrous as Zion Williamson. Now, I wonder if even Duke is dirty. Speaking of Wooden, UCLA is still choking in the exhaust of that dynasty to the point where Rick Barnes at Tennessee had to mull over the decision whether to stay at a traditional football school in the SEC or become the latest fool to try to fix the unfixable UCLA program. Barnes would be smarter to stay right where he is in Knoxville, where they are thrilled just to reach the Sweet 16. At UCLA, no man can succeed because of the ghost of Wooden, and it's no longer a great job. It's no longer even a good job, despite the built-in advantages of LA, that brand-new basketball center. I wouldn't go anywhere near UCLA. It's career suicide, Rick Barnes. And say what you want about Bob Knight, who choked and abused his Indiana players in ways that made him the all-time coaching madman. But integrity in regard to paying players never was an issue for Knight. Once the crustiest of coaching ogres, Knight has become a sad figure in recent months, struggling with his memory during a speech at an Indiana high school as he incorrectly said that former Hoosier Landon Turner had passed away. Not true. Knight forgot that his wife already had been introduced, and he wrongly inserted Damon Bailey in an anecdote about Michael Jordan. Not something you're really doing every day, Damon Bailey as Michael Jordan. Knight did return to the IU campus for the first time since his 2000 firing, taking in a baseball game over the weekend, and that's important because he swore he would never return to Bloomington. The fact he did, I get the sense he is sealing some open wounds while he still has the time. I've been saying this for a month, so I'll repeat it here. Rory McIlroy finally will win his first Masters green jacket and join, let's see, Jack Nicklaus, Tiger Woods, Ben Hogan, Gary Player, and Gene Sarazen as the only players to win all four major championships. Rory playing some of his best golf ever. He's looking like the best player in the world again. But to notch that blessed career Grand Slam, he has to overcome severe mental blocks dating back to 2011 at Augusta, where he blew the 54-hole lead with a final round 80. And ever since then, Rory gets to Sunday and he chokes. Rory and Sunday afternoons have not meshed well for a long time. Let's see, you can go back now almost 5 years without a major after winning four in 4 years as a shooting star. I think it's time to prove he's the king of golf, or step back. It's a title Jordan Spieth has failed to grasp. Amid his inconsistency, here is McIlroy sounding confident.
You know, I'm doing all the right things. I'm putting myself in position. So, you know, I just have to stay patient. You know, that's my thing. Obviously, I would love to be able to complete the Grand Slam before I'm 30 years of age. But, you know, you look at some of the greats in the game and they didn't start winning majors until their earlier or mid-30s. So I've got time, but at the same time, you know, I feel like I'm at a place where, you know, I am very comfortable with my game right now. I'm doing everything that I think I should be doing. And, you know, it's all about putting myself in a position to win on the back nine on Sunday. You know, and that's all I'm thinking about. Just give myself another chance and see how I handle it. So, I'm positive it'll happen one day if I keep practicing and working hard and doing the right things. You know, it'll go my way, and you know, you never know, that could be this year. Hopefully.
Notice how I didn't lead with Tiger. That's because I have little confidence he can win and complete the full circle comeback from hell. Now, of course, I speak for golfing kind in saying there'd be nothing better than Woods and Victory Red contending on Sunday at about 5, 6 o'clock. Yeah. But he hasn't done that since 2011 at Augusta, when McIlroy was crashing and Tiger couldn't take advantage, remember? He hasn't been in that cabin since 2005. But he does appear to be healthy, though that could change with one swing, and he could feel a twinge in his back, his neck, his knee. And he did beat McIlroy, I've got to say this, in match play recently, so he seems to be healthy, and he's coming off that pleasant victory. But Woods must have his complete A game heading into Augusta, and his putting has been an abomination this season. He ranks 146th, putting inside 10 feet. And he's three-putting with alarming regularity. Tiger hasn't had two straight rounds in the 60s all year, and the days of Woods out-driving everybody at Augusta and making the fathers Tigerize the course down there are long gone. So unless Woods flips the magic button on, and I should note he had a 65 in his first Masters practice round, it is not happening at Augusta for Woods once again.
Right on track. You know, I feel like I'm able to shape the golf ball both ways, which I'm going to need there. Just need a few more putts go in, but that's about it.
So who else? Maybe this is the year Dustin Johnson wins when we aren't expecting it, though there's still time for him to fall down some stairs, right? Francesco Molinari might be ready, the Italian stallion. Justin Rose's 5 top 10 finishes at Augusta. Don't forget Brooks Koepka, the least celebrated golfer I can remember who has won 3 majors, though Brooks has lost a ton of weight and doesn't drive as far. Why did he lose a ton of weight? Remember what he looked like? He coming out of the weight room every single day, 5 times a day. Or could it have been something else? Anyway, he doesn't drive as far. You won't recognize the guy. Just saying, folks, I'm a realistic sports monitor, okay? A guy like that looks like Barry Bonds, and he drops a bunch of weight. What am I supposed to expect here? And I guess we shouldn't count out Phil Mickelson, who is trying to become the oldest player ever to win a major. Phil is pushing 50. Sometimes he acts 20. He's 48. I expect him on the weekend leaderboard. I expect all of the above on the weekend leaderboard, chasing McIlroy. And if Rory does blow another 54-hole lead, he's going to become a punchline, and you don't want that heading into your 30s. Problem with Rory is he peaked too early. He's trying to get it back. He's had a lot of problems on and off the course. This is his time, or else. And Hootie Johnson, good old boy, must be rolling around in his grave now that women not only are welcomed as members at Augusta National, but now are competing there for the first time with the club holding its women's amateur event over the weekend. Wake Forest's Jennifer Kupcho shot 67 to win the inaugural competition. I remember covering
Tiger's 1997 breakthrough at Augusta and hearing racist comments in the men's room. Since then, Tiger has grown to kind of own the place, and women are winning tournaments there. It's about damned time, right? To baseball, where the season won't be as much fun if the Red Sox and the Cubs are not contending. No MLB champ has repeated, of course, since the Yankees won three straight at the turn of the century, and nothing's going to change this season, I'm afraid, with the Red Sox starting worse than any World Series champion since 1998. Now, I'm not going to be stupid here and declare them done. I suspect their starting rotation will stop allowing torrents of home runs and return to some sort of normalcy, but the problem is Chris Sale, whose velocity has dipped to the point that team boss Dave Dombrowski might have whiffed badly in giving Sale a fat extension instead of seeing how he'd do in his contract year. The errors and the base-running blunders will improve as well. But I don't think the Red Sox are going to play up to their $222 million payroll this season. I think it's the Yankees' season, even though they've had some hiccups early. As for the Cubs, I am not sure at all that they're going to rebound from this mess. With the great Theo Epstein taking blame for the slow start, as well he should, having spent so unwisely on a train wreck pitching staff that has been abysmal. $126 million for Yu Darvish right after his World Series flameout. $126 million. Yeah, we believe in you. Why? Nobody was believing in Darvish, but the great Theo was. $36 million for Tyler Chatwood, straight from Coors Field, not very smart. And $21 million for Brandon Morrow. None of them have panned out. He doesn't have a closer. And now you've got staff ace John Lester with a hamstring issue. The Jason Hayward signing still haunts this team, always will. Should the Ricketts family have bid for Bryce Harper? Absolutely, given the embarrassing stories that have emerged about bigoted patriarch Joe Ricketts and some infighting within the family. By not bidding on Harper, the Cubs are kind of stuck with what they have. They are hitting and scoring runs. That's not the problem. The problem is a dreadful bullpen that could be helped immensely by some spending. Craig Kimbrell is still out there. But Tom Ricketts says he's tapped out. Yeah, sure. Right. No, you're not tapped out. No. In a division where the Brewers and the Cardinals are better than the Cubs, I think the Cubs are closer to being lovable losers again than champs, although there's nothing lovable about them. And their fans, which once sort of sat there and sang, "Go Cubs, go," even though they're 4-16 or whatever, and I'd sit there and go, "What is wrong with these people? What is wrong with them? It's 36 degrees, you're singing, go Cubs, go." Well, now they're angry. They win a World Series, and now they're all pissed off like fans everywhere else. You know what? They have a right to be, because the great Theo has really screwed this thing up. And you know how historically bad Chris Davis has become in Baltimore? It's almost useless now to waste energy booing the guy because nothing is going to change. Since signing that 7-year, $161 million deal that clearly is the worst contract in sports, Davis has made history, all right. He has been the primary reason why MLB owners are reluctant to give long-term deals to players 30 and older. Albert Pujols also up there. But look at Davis. After hitting 168 last season, Davis, who hit 47 homers in 2015, positioned himself for all-time infamy by entering Monday's game with no hits in his past 44 at-bats, three outs from the all-time futility record set by somebody named Eugenio Velez in 2011. Why is he still in the lineup? Think about this. Davis, no runs scored since September 18th, 2018. No hits since September 14, 2018. No RBI since September 4, 2018. No home runs since August 24, 2018. No road home runs since July 20th, 2018. And no batting average above 186 since October the 1st, 2017. And he is still owed $92 million by the Orioles. I am crying. These are legitimate tears. The antithesis of Davis, the Dodgers' Cody Bellinger, is swinging like the rookie who set baseball ablaze. He is looking like an MVP candidate. He is looking like a Triple Crown candidate. Now, he's streaky, but Dodger fans are thrilled to see this because they really didn't know what happened to him last year. And Mike Trout, you've heard of him. The $430 million deal has not burdened him one bit, with Trout already threatening to put up his best ever numbers for wins above replacement. War. Not that the nation will notice, though, as the Angels once again will not be reaching the postseason or showcasing the greatest player ever in October. Did Trout even think a little bit about the possibility of never winning when he sentenced himself to Anaheim for 12 years? Come on, Mike. It's still against MLB rules for a pitcher to use foreign substances, but Pirates starter Chris Archer did appear to have pine tar right near his belt area. Didn't hide it well. Check out the video evidence from Sunday against Cincinnati. So, I repeat, does MLB have a commissioner to look into this problem? Every show, I say, paging Rob Manfred. Where are you, Rob? Here's another problem. Why aren't you looking into it? Are you now allowing pine tar? Just let us know if you are. Although it's in the rule book, it's not allowed. Archer also sparked a benches clearing episode earlier by throwing a pitch behind Cincinnati's Derek Dietrich, and it didn't take Yasiel Puig long to Puig it up in Cincinnati, offering to take on the entire Pittsburgh team. Reds teammate Joey Votto basically had to choke hold Puig to stop him. If you're wondering why the Dodgers are happier this season, breezing along, winning, even with some injuries and no Bryce Harper, it might be because Puig is no longer here. Absolute pain in the ass in the clubhouse and in the dugout and in the field and at the plate. He just wasn't worth it. His few magical moments, you saw them in October, they were too few and far between to deal with his crap. To the NBA, where seedings are taking shape for postseason qualifiers, as LeBron James has trouble finding players who will join the Hollywood producer in filming Space Jam 2. Seems no one wants to be dunked on by LeBron in the movie, smart call, just as no superstar wants to play with LeBron in real life. Don't expect any first-round upsets in the East, with the second round shaking out to be classic stuff in the East. Giannis Antetokounmpo and the Bucks versus Kyrie Irving and the dysfunctional Celtics. While the Raptors and Kawhi Leonard likely making his lone playoff appearance north of the border, playing the 76ers. That's must-watch stuff. Hell, no one even wants the 8th seed in the East, which is assured of having one, if not two, playoff qualifiers at 500 or below. In the West, the Warriors will wait for the Rockets, with Houston's number 3 seed assuring no meeting between those two teams before the conference finals, as it should be. The incomparable James Harden and the Rockets have one-upped the Warriors in revolutionizing the three-point game. They hit a record 27 the other night. So what Mike D'Antoni did was he took the Steve Kerr playbook and ramped it up. That's what D'Antoni does. And what's so fascinating about that is that Kerr and D'Antoni did not get along in Phoenix many years ago when Kerr was the GM and D'Antoni was the coach. I still think there's a D'Antoni grudge there. And I can't wait until they play in the Western Finals. Okay? There, I just saved you a few weeks of watching. We do have two first-round matchups set. Portland, Utah, Boston, Indiana, and yes, take the Jazz and the Celtics. And my awards. Last week, I gave you my reluctant pick of Giannis as MVP, admittedly choosing him because he's fun and fresh, and he's revolutionary in his own way, and he's two-way dominant, two-way being the key phrase here, for a small market team that has been losing for a long time. Okay? I'm doing the novelty pick, the romance pick, but I also have to acknowledge here that James Harden has become one of the greatest and most innovative scorers of all time. He doesn't get it done in the postseason the way he does in the regular season, and I've been down on Harden, but it's impossible. If you've watched him the last 3 months rally this team into the number three seed with stupendous performances. He is so innovative. He is clever. He has changed the game. Very good defenders have no idea how to handle him. The floater has become an effective high percentage shot for him. In addition to the step back three, everything he else does, he's a magician. Even though I still say the man could lose a few pounds, I'm really torn on who the MVP of the league is here, but I am going with Giannis. Just barely, 51-49. The coach of the year has to be Mike Budenholzer for arriving in Milwaukee and designing a system that maximizes Antetokounmpo on both ends. Your defensive player of the year is Rudy Gobert, the Utah center, though you could give that to Kawhi Leonard. I'm torn there, too. Kawhi just has missed a fair share of games this season. Gobert doesn't seem to get his props, and he cried when he didn't make the All-Star team, literally cried, so I felt bad for him, so I gave him my Defensive Player of the Year award. Don't ever say I don't have a heart. Rookie of the Year is closer than you think. Luka Doncic wins, but Trae Young, after a sloppy start, has been magnificent in the second half. And while he's never going to be the next Steph Curry, he is developing that kind of magical game as a showman and a shooter. So that's a close call, but Doncic wins. And do I think Paul Pierce had a better career than Dwayne Wade? No, but it's worth a conversation. Contrary to the anger spewed on social media by Wade's celebrity wife, Gabrielle Union, Pierce is paid by ESPN to offer opinions, and unlike many athletes who don't have many opinions, Pierce's are often memorable, such as his rant about former Celtic Isaiah Thomas and how the team was going to honor him. Here was Pierce earning his money on the studio set when asked by Michelle Beadle whether his career was better than Dwayne Wade's.
All right, tail of the tape. Both NBA Finals MVP. You have him in career points. He's got more playoff points. You are a more clutch shooter overall. He's got more playoff points. Paul, riddle me this. Who's the better NBA player?
That's easy. I can say that off the bat. That's me. If you give me Shaq, if you give me LeBron,
they did.
Call the big three. We got that late, but like early in my career.
Let me ask you this. What would have been a perfect time for you, Paul? Let's make sure we get this right.
When I was 24 years old, okay. You give me Shaq. When I'm 24, 25, you give me LeBron and Bosh. I'd be sitting on 5 or 6 championships. Easy.
So then who has the better NBA career?
I played 10 years. I played 10 years with who?
Speaking of Wade, how about the Miami Heat sliding out of a playoff berth in the East, even as the Detroit Pistons and Blake Griffin lose game after game after game, meaning it appears Wade's career is done this week. He says he's going to try therapy to ease the pain of retirement. My guess is a TV gig will smooth that transition. And if I'm up there in Bristol, I'm putting Dwayne Wade right next to Paul Pierce. I always have to do... Back it up after Pierce. 3-2-1. See how I always have to do the thinking for these television executives. By the way, the NBA must be mortified that the Detroit Pistons or the Charlotte Hornets are going to make the playoffs and Dwayne Wade isn't? Now it's time for The Buzz, our deep dive into sports and life. Chris joining the program. And Chris, we talk about extended replay in sports way too often. And shouldn't college basketball move quickly to review plays such as the Ty Jerome double dribble? We're going to remember that for a long time. Also, give me your take on the Monday night championship game and what you saw all weekend out of Minneapolis.
Well, Jay, going into Final Four weekend, I said I wasn't very excited, and I wasn't. Saturday, I wasn't really thrilled to have to... I felt like it was a chore to have to watch those games. The calls in the Virginia-Auburn game, obviously I said I wanted Auburn. I wanted Auburn. I wanted to see Bruce Pearl not have to cry. So I was annoyed at that. But when it's all said and done, the championship game ended up being a thriller, which most people didn't think it would be. Most people thought it would be a bore. And the way it started, it was kind of like, okay. But it ended up being great. And it ended up with Virginia being a great story. The way they ended last year's tournament, the way they ended this year's tournament. So all in all, I think a win for NCAA college hoops. As for review and replay, it sort of gets back to what we say for every sport. Get it right, right? Let's get it right, guys.
And Chris, as a Duke fan, are you concerned about Michael Avenatti connecting Zion to Nike payoffs? Or is Avenatti such a scumbag that you dismiss whatever he says as a lie?
I don't dismiss what he says, because usually just when there's a little bit of smoke, that usually means there's a fire. And again, I wouldn't be stunned. I love Coach K, I love Duke, but they get these recruits somehow, and they have to play the same games that everybody else is playing to get the recruits. So let's be honest here. And again, even if it all is proven as bad, I know how you feel about these things, but ultimately, every major D1 school seems to have some sort of violations, some sort of stain on them. So it is what it is, to me at least. And you have to figure out some sort of fix moving forward, or else this is just going to happen year after year with the big recruits. Maybe the one and done, getting rid of the one and done actually prevents that, because those players, those special talents, the Zions, the LeBrons of the world, they can go to the pros and get their money, and that leaves more grassroots college basketball players that will stay for 4 years, where year after year, imagine where we get into the tournament like the old days to watch the college basketball stories and root for the coaches, and year after year, you get to know the players, and it's competitive basketball, and that is what it is. We don't watch Duke because the Zion Williams of that year or the RJ Barrett of that year is playing. That, to me, is part of the fix of how you avoid some of these issues.
And, Chris, are you still sticking with Tiger to win the Masters? And if so, do you have any putting tips to provide the man? Because I think right now you can putt better than Woods.
I went through a spell of not being able to putt, and I'm back being able to putt. So maybe, hopefully, Tiger's back to being able to putt. I don't have him winning the Masters. I have him being competitive and being exciting, and I can't wait. But I don't have him winning the Masters, no. I'm rooting for Ricky. I'm rooting for Tiger, of course, but I'm rooting for Ricky to maybe pop through and win his first major at Augusta and put on that green jacket.
Thanks, Chris, which brings us to quickies, which are just that quick. Muffet McGraw has been instrumental in the impossible dream, helping to further UConn's demise as college basketball's preeminent women's program. But after McGraw and Notre Dame beat Gino Auriemma for the second straight season in a national semifinal, which means 3 years in a row without a title for the once dominant Huskies, McGraw went too far in her ongoing crusade about gender equality. She said she was very, very pleased that both coaches in Sunday's national final were women, which was a first since 2012. Now, if a male coach had said that, he would have been crucified for sexism, and I don't put up with that, okay? We're all trying to be equal here. So, Muffet, you are a sexist pig. In the title game, by the way, McGraw and the Irish lost to Kim Mulkey and Baylor. I have a project for Larry Baer, the deposed San Francisco Giants CEO, who has been suspended until July the 2nd for a physical incident in which he tried to reclaim his phone from his wife in a public park. I think Larry should try to grab the phone away, just head over the Bay Bridge, and try to grab the phone away from Antonio Brown. The problematic superstar receiver got what he wanted, a trade from Pittsburgh to Oakland, but he has continued his immature shots at former teammates on social media, saying Juju Smith-Schuster, quote, fumbled the whole postseason in the biggest game of the year, unquote, after Schuster was named the Steelers' most valuable player in team voting. Schuster, who is a good kid, responded thusly, quote, crazy how big that ego got to be taking shots at people who show you love. All I ever did was show that man love and respect from the moment I got to the league. I was genuinely happy for him, too, when he got traded to Oakland with a big contract, and now he takes shots at me on social media. Quote unquote, Juju Smith-Schuster. Is John Gruden sure he wants this ass clown, Antonio Brown, around no matter how spectacular he can be? The last thing the Raiders need in their chaotic final season in the East Bay is constant troublemaking from Brown. And he will be a constant troublemaker. Get used to it. And it's time to cover hockey on the podcast with all eyes on the Tampa Bay Lightning, the NHL's dominant team with a blurry 62 wins in 82 games. This team seems to have everything. Snipers in league MVP Nikita Kucherov and Steven Stamkos, a sturdy defense, and stellar goaltending from Andrei Vasilevsky. But I'm looking at Alex Ovechkin. He hasn't slowed down from his hangover tour, and maybe the Capitals are ready to become the rare back-to-back Stanley Cup winner. Hasn't happened in ages. Just throwing it out there. Boston has had the look of a contender all year. I saw the Bruins about a month ago. Yeah, as long as Brad Marchand doesn't lick anybody. So the East will be a war, while the West appears wide open. Maybe it's time for a surprise team such as St. Louis. I know my hockey. St. Louis has been unbeatable of late behind rookie goaltending revelation Jordan Binnington. One thing I do know, you know, no Blackhawks, no Kings, no Rangers. The major markets in the States are not represented. No, I do not count the Islanders because they're playing playoff games way out in the island. No, and that's never good for the sport because the Blackhawks and the Kings have been dominant in this decade. Not anymore. They're barely visible. But hockey in general is faster and more explosive. It's younger thanks to new rules. And the Stanley Cup playoffs are worth a watch. Who says we don't cover hockey on Unmuted?
And now a final Mariotti commentary too hot for ESPN, too smart for the internet, and too white male for Jemele Hill. Take it away, Jay.
This by no means should be considered a defense of Craig Carton, the New York sports radio personality. He deserves every nanosecond of his 3.5-year prison sentence for defrauding investors of millions in a ticket reselling scam, which he blamed on a gambling addiction and memories of being sexually abused at age 11. But shame on the judge in this case, Colleen McMahon, for mocking Carton's demise in Manhattan federal court. I could not believe this. McMahon happened to be a listener of Carton's show on WFAN, and sure enough, as he awaited sentencing on the worst day of his adult life, she greeted him like a radio listener. I'm quoting, "Good afternoon, Mr. Carton. Colleen from New York. First time, long time." As in caller. A judge did this? She continued, "I knew you could be fun to listen to. I also knew you could be a jerk." Oh, I mean, she should be disbarred for that. She's making fun of the guy. It was as if she couldn't wait to throw Carton into the slammer. It's not her role to demean Carton behind the boundaries of his crime and her ruling. I once dealt with a dubious judge, a Mariotti aside, a cranky old fart who never studied the case and seemed to play with his computer the entire time. And I wondered if he knows that I won the subsequent civil case and that this whole thing was expunged in quick order. Does this man even know that? We had to have the judge changed. Yeah. I had the city attorney say to me, "You should have the judge changed. He's not right." I don't think we did change him. And then they changed the terms or whatever you're supposed to do. I was like, what? Yeah, what is going on here? Problem is, these judges often don't have oversight. There's nobody judging the judges. And somebody should be judging her. Again, Carton, guilty of sin. I would have said 5, 6, 7 years, okay? Not defending Carton. I'm shocked she mocked him. It was not her place to do that. All it does is cast further aspersions on the judicial system, and I agree with Carton's former partner, Boomer Esiason, who wondered why Carton chose a trial rather than a plea bargain. Just give the man his sentence and move on. Be professional. Instead of trying to offer up a weak audition as the next Judge Judy. That's our show for our producer and editor, Chris. I am Jay, reminding you to never, ever, ever let anybody mute you in life. Hear me, Colleen McMahon?
I shot the sheriff, but I did not shoot the deputy.